My hope and my vision is to really sort of change the way people think about delivery. And our idea and our hope is to see more bikes servicing these types of applications in more cities across America and across the world.
This is Can Do, a podcast that explores the business lessons essential for success in these volatile times. Can Do shares the insights of industry experts, along with the experience and advice of local businessmen and businesswomen. Whether you're a business owner, an entrepreneur, or your career is affected by the current economic climate, these lessons will give you the guidance you need to make informed decisions about your future. I'm your host, Arnie Sherman. Ben Morris discovered the utility of three-wheeled cargo trikes, or pedicabs, during a stint in San Diego. After finishing his business degree at Northeastern University in 2005, he secured a small loan, bought five pedicabs, and launched Coaster Cycles. Soon Ben had expanded beyond Boston to other cities, and he'd begun to incorporate outdoor advertising into his bike fleet. Since 2012, Coaster Cycles has manufactured its own models of eco-friendly three-wheeled electric bikes. Companies like Amazon, FedEx, UPS, and Starbucks use them as coffee carts, warehouse and delivery vehicles, mobile concession stands, and more. Dozens of e-bike models are fabricated at a former lumber and plywood mill site in Bonner, Montana. When COVID-19 hit in 2020, Morris watched his company's momentum screech to a halt. Applying his entrepreneurial acumen, he began producing face shields for healthcare workers. Soon, CC Face Shields was employing 115 people, manufacturing 50,000 shields a day. Today on Can Do, we look at the evolution of Coaster Cycles' business model, how COVID has affected demand for e-commerce delivery, and what the future holds for pedal power vehicles. Support for this episode of Can Do is provided by the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, dedicated to investing in people to improve the quality of their lives. Additional support comes from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans, and Parsons, Bailey, and Latimer, a regional law firm with national expertise representing the interests of Montana entrepreneurs and businesses. More information at ParsonsBailey.com. Ben Morris, welcome to the show today. Where are you joining us from?
Thank you very much. I'm joining from the San Francisco Bay Area, East Bay, Walnut Creek.
Can you share with our listeners a little bit about your background?
I'm from Florida. I grew up in Florida. I went to school in Boston at Northeastern University. Presently, as I mentioned, based here in the Bay Area, I've been here for about 10 years, and I am currently the owner, CEO and founder of Coaster Cycles.
And what's the focus these days of Coaster Cycles?
These days, predominantly focused on the manufacturing of electric cargo trikes, or ECTs, which is a new term that we are working on utilizing. Specifically focus around last mile delivery and servicing clients and customers who are working within that industry.
And where did you get the inspiration for the company? I mean, it started 16 years ago. Can you hearken back and tell me what you were thinking then?
Well, I could say what I was thinking then is very different than what I'm thinking today. I was doing my final co-op actually through Northeastern University. I was in San Diego working for the Navy actually. And while I was living out there, I saw pedicabs operating all over the gas lamp. And this was 2004. And I kind of got back to Boston and realized, wow, there's no pedi. There were two actually at the time in Boston. And I was like, you got to believe that the city of Boston has got a marketplace for more than two pedicabs. I told about my parents about it. And they said, wow, that's really interesting. And they actually gave me a loan to purchase my first five bikes, which I started up in the spring, St. Paddy's Day, amazing day in Boston always. So St. Paddy's Day 2005 was our first day of operations in Boston, and kind of the rest was history from there.
You mentioned the way the business was envisioned 16 years ago is a lot different than it is now. So what are those differences?
So at that point, we were a taxi business. That was take people from point A to point B, essentially. I have this conversation with folks often right now around sort of this notion of micromobility and scooters and bikes and ride hail and Lyft and Uber. And at the time when we started, we were just, it was us and taxi cabs. So we often competed and talked about medallion owners and the taxi industry and the lobby around that in terms of how we are regulated and how they were regulated. And so our sort of point, like our taxi operation, point A to point B, turned into a media business, which ultimately really turned into sort of a manufacturing endeavor. And so we've seen sort of all facets of it, but our focus over the past 16 years has been and always will be exclusively on three wheels.
And why three wheels instead of four wheels or two wheels?
So four wheels, number one, can operate in bike lanes. So there's regulatory implications around four wheels. And there are some four wheel products right now that are currently in the market, mostly manufactured in Europe, but you can't operate in those bike lanes. So there's a big restriction there. And the two wheel marketplace is just super competitive. I mean, when you look at the number of players in the space domestically and internationally, you sort of open up these group of competitors that are exponentially larger than where we are right now. And so, you know, we've always recognized our core competency is on three wheels. Let's focus exclusively on three wheels and let everybody else go figure out two and four.
The original pedicabs were person powered. They were not electric, right?
Yeah. So all of ours were pedal powered. At the time, interestingly enough, because we've talked, everybody has talked and seen the recent explosion of like e-bikes, right, and electric bikes. And back then, electric pedicabs were through a front hub motor, a Heinzmann motor made out of Germany. And the batteries that were used were like basically like a car battery, a lead acid battery that weighed like 50 pounds each. And so, you know, everybody pedaled, and that was what we did. You didn't have this pedal power, this electric option. And so that kind of puts us in the old school, I suppose, in terms of like how we envision that. But, you know, the change in that marketplace has been really profound and is moving super fast, much in the way we're seeing electrification of vehicles as well and trucks.
You also mentioned you entered the advertising business. And how did that come about?
Yeah, so when we started, it was really this operations business. So you buy the bikes, you lease the bikes to the drivers, and they go out and they run the bikes for the day as independent contractors. We were a rental company, and they paid a fee to do it. And that generated like one part of our revenue within our business. I gravitated more to the media or the advertising side of the business, recognizing that you have this mobile asset that's running around the cities and is at Fenway Park and is at, you know, convention centers. And you're in front of a really broad audience and you're sort of eye level, like on the street, like really kind of centered around these folks. And so, you know, I sort of realized there was an opportunity to go and monetize that by selling the media space on there. And so this category of product sort of falls in the out-of-home industry, out-of-home category, where you'll see taxi tops and bus shelters and billboards and things, mobile billboard trucks. And so, yeah, that was something that kind of developed very early on. And so I kind of set out on this endeavor really to work through the out of home agencies across the country to explain to them and really educate them on like what this new medium is and what the value it is that we bring to clients. And we started like very much on the local level in Boston, restaurants, bars, shops, mortgage offices, and quickly grew that to, you know, working with the largest brands in the world and the largest agencies in the world.
You originally purchasing your pedicabs from a manufacturer. Why did you make the decision to start manufacturing yourself?
That decision was really driven actually out of our media business. We started our operations in Boston. We went to Newport, Rhode Island. We went to Washington, D.C. And then we started scattering all across the country to a point where I think at our height, we were operating in 14 or 15 different cities, had about 500 drivers, 150 bikes. And we were selling the advertising on those bikes, but we also were working with like all the fleet owners of pedicabs all around the country and who are running larger fleets like us. And as we were doing that, the fleet owners came to us and said, look, you know, Ben and Justin, who's my partner, he's like, you guys understand the operation side of the business. You understand the media side of the business, but the product that exists and that's readily available for us to all run today just isn't that great. Like we haven't seen advancements in the technology and the design of the bikes where we think it should be today. Why aren't you guys like building a bike? And so, you know, we kind of tinkered on this back and forth for a number of months. And ultimately we decided, hey, look, you know, let's go try doing this. Let's see if we could engineer and design and build a better bike that was in the marketplace, mostly as a way to be more vertically integrated. So in our mind was, if we could build the bike and we could operate the bike and we could sell the media on the bike, then that's a really enticing, you know, business model there.
And why did you pick Missoula, Montana to manufacture?
Actually, we started in Darby, Montana, which many folks don't know about. And so after we finished our design process with our engineering firm out of Madison, Wisconsin, I came back home. At the time I was living in Oakland, and I got connected with the CEO of Extra Cycle. And he had been sort of a mentor of mine along the way. And he told me, hey, Ben, you know, there's this small shop up in Missoula, Montana, that's building three-wheel recumbent bikes. You should go up and talk to them. So me never having ever been to Montana before, I got on a plane in February. I landed in a snowstorm and ended up spending a couple days in Darby, Montana. And, you know, ultimately decided at the time this would be a shop that could help us at least get through sort of our prototyping and proof of concept. And so really, that's actually where it started with us, in a shop that it was probably 500 square feet in size. And yeah, so it really, that's how it really started up there.
You're now operating out of an old mill site, and you have, what, 25,000 square feet? How many vehicles can you produce from that location?
We actually had one stop along the way. After we left Darby, we actually came up in the town and we were just doing assembly across from the airport. We kind of had this inflection point, Justin and I, who has lived in Missoula, and said, look, we really want to take this to the next level. We want to bring all aspect of the build in-house. And does it make sense to stay here, or should we go back to the East Coast, or should we come to the Bay Area? And it was actually after conversations with our bank and with introductions to the owners of the lumber mill and some work with, you know, Missoula Economic Partnership and some folks saying, hey, we can help you out here, was this decision to stay. And so we were actually a fairly early tenant at the old sawmill. It started with about 7,600 square feet in the old warehouse build, gone a second location out in the mill. So I think we're about 40 feet out of the sawmill from facilities. And we have current production capacity in our facilities to build 5,000 bikes a year out there. And that's what we're continuing to build towards.
Your business is moving along very nicely. You're growing, you're expanding, you're in multiple markets. COVID-19 hits. What happened?
Well, we were actually at that point, we were trying to raise money. We had worked to go out and raise a round of financing to help expand our growth and facility, help expand a new business model. And I started in January, and we were out, we were getting some traction, February getting some traction. And all of a sudden, one of our advertising clients, TikTok, actually said, look, we've got this thing coming up for South by Southwest, this activation in March. And TikTok's based out of Asia. And they're saying, we've got this thing over there and we're going to cancel our program at South by Southwest. This was mid-February. And we're like, what do you mean you're going to cancel your program? And at that point, we started having conversations internally saying, you know, are we missing here? What do we need to be prepared for? What does this look like if we postpone our stuff for 4, 6, or 8 weeks? That started happening. All of a sudden, COVID hits, you know, the United States. We see cases in Washington. And at the point, Justin and I made this almost impossible decision to start, you know, laying folks off within the organization, like recognizing, like, we didn't know what was going to happen, right? Because everything we build at that time was very sort of event driven. So we're building bikes to be at stadiums and convention centers and amusement parks and like everything that requires people to be at. And that just stopped abruptly. And so the same week that we went through these round of layoffs, which is the most difficult thing we've done in 15 years, I haven't done that sort of in the company history. Friday evening, I was scrolling through LinkedIn and I came across a post from one of the engineers with the firm that did our initial pedicab design. And he said, here's an open source face shield design. And so I sent that over to Justin and said, Justin, this sounds crazy, but I think we could do this. It's a staple, it's foam, it's plastic and elastic. And so he said, all right, let's go check it out. And so And at that time in COVID, medical personnel could not get PPE at all, right? And it's like, how are we as the general community supposed to be protected if the people who are treating us are not protected? And so we sort of reached out to one of the hospital groups in Providence, and they came back and said, looks great, we'll take a half million of them. And we're like, at that time we had only made three of them, assembled three face shields. And so we're like, all right, I guess we're going to go and make face shields. And so we, you know, built up the supply chain. We recognized two of the pieces of material on plastic and foam we utilized in our bikes already. So we had familiarity with that product. And we basically took our entire factory and all the bike stuff and stuck it aside. And we started building stations to assemble face shields. And that was scary, right? Because like you had to start thinking like, what happens if someone in your facility gets COVID? Like, then what do we do? And like, we have these production schedules and we get this product built, and like, how are we cleaning and how are people distancing? And so it was crazy. I mean, it was a whirlwind. It was like a 3-month like whirlwind. And we got tremendous community support with a bunch of businesses in Missoula who came on and actually started working with us to help with the assembly, because we couldn't do it all in-house. We didn't have enough space. And so at the height of it, we had about 115 people locally in Missoula who were assembling and helping with the shipping of face shields that we shipped all over the country, actually.
And what's the status of that operation now?
The status of that operation now is the supply chain has rectified itself for the vast majority of PPE, and there's a lot of product in from Asia. And so it's more or less has sort of corrected itself. And so we're not building face shields anymore. We did that through probably into like the middle of summer last year, and then went and fulfilled orders. But we manufactured and assembled 2 million of them out of the facility and in Missoula.
We are speaking with Ben Morris, founder and CEO of Coaster Cycles. Support for this episode of Can Do is provided by Montana Rail Links, committed to safely delivering transportation solutions to their customers and partners. Additional support comes from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. And Parsons, Bailey & Latimer, a regional law firm with national expertise representing the interests of Montana entrepreneurs and businesses. More information at ParsonsBailey.com. So this was a whirlwind period in Coaster Cycles existence. You push the bikes to the side, you're making face shields, you're trying to partner with other people. What kind of financial considerations, what kind of business model considerations were fermenting at that point for the company?
It was actually probably one of the best things that happened to us. And it sounds almost a little crude just because of the nature of what it was and why we were, the purpose of it and what was driven behind it. But we've done a lot of side projects over the course of the years, hot dog carts, laundromats. And when we got the contract for the face shields and when this happened, we were able to all of a sudden take a sigh of relief to say, oh my, like we are going to be able to bring our folks back who want to come back and do this. We can pay our rents. We can pay our insurance. We can keep like basically everything afloat. At the time being, as our core business was just stalled, right? You know, financially, that gave us, you know, the face shield business gave us that freedom to be able to do that and to think that way. More importantly, I would say the most profound lesson it gave us is that in the pre-COVID environment, as we were getting ready to raise that money, we were doing a lot of things. And when I say like we were doing a lot of things, from the manufacturing side, you know, we talked about we started in pedicabs, but it really transitioned more to like a B2B model. So like we were building for Starbucks and we were building for the military and we were building for like Tesla and all the micromobility companies and hotels and resorts. And we had great products and we had a great customer base, like really big brands across all these sectors and verticals. The problem with that is it was not very focused, and we were trying to figure out like, and from a scale opportunity, like which one of these markets are going to really scale. And I had always been a big advocate of last mile delivery. I thought that presented one of the largest opportunities, and we said, okay, this is maybe the way we have to think. And that's a direct lesson from the face shields in the sense that like on the face shields, we did one thing. And it was simple, and we did it in scale. And so that kind of taught Justin and I this lesson to say, hey, when we go back out, like in a post-COVID environment, right, let's not do 25 models of bikes across 30 different verticals and industries. Let's focus on a much more refined vehicle lineup in maybe one or two industries. And so as we were doing the face shields, we had kind of reached out to a couple folks in the last mile delivery space. And that's where we kind of really like started gaining some traction because, you know, one thing COVID did to all of us was it really drove this like e-commerce growth, right? Because people who never were buying stuff online, never buying groceries online, never buying food online, were all doing this and it was making this massive strain on the supply chain there. When I talk about the pivot from like what we were doing to what we did in face shields to what we're doing now, you know, face shields was that thing that said, let's do one thing and let's do it in scale. And that's really what we're doing right now in sort of the Coaster 3.0, as we're calling it.
So Coaster 3.0 is a multifunctional three-wheel utility vehicle that's used for last mile delivery. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Yeah. Electric.
They're all electric now. You're out of the pedal business. You're in the electric business, right?
We were always in the pedal business and you still pedal the electric bike, but you know, there's this shift now that like, if I'm going to go ride this bike 9-12 hours a day carrying goods all around, like I want to have some assist. So you still have to pedal. There's not a throttle. You still have to pedal in order to make your deliveries.
And who's your competition in this space now? Now that you've sort of figured out your lanes that you're going to stay in and who the right customers are, what's the competition? Who do you have to look out for?
Well, most of it's European right now. There's not a lot of North American competition in this space, certainly not in the three-wheeled space. But we know there's always going to be competition, right? And competition's good. Competition drives us to be better. We just have sort of, as an organization, a different approach. You know, one thing we talk about regularly with our customers, and we've talked about here today, is we're operators first. So we admittingly design and engineer from sort of an operator's perspective as opposed to maybe more of a general aesthetic or design look and feel. And so we kind of take our learnings that we have experienced over the past 15 years in operating fleets in terms of like how we design. So that's an important part. The other important part is that we make our product in America. That could be our biggest, actually, advantage, because with the customers with whom we work with, they want stuff and they want stuff now, and they want stuff that generally we work through 2, 3, 4 iterations of the product. And so when you think about manufacturing in Asia or you think about manufacturing in Europe, that process to go through those iterations takes a lot of time. And so our speed and flexibility and sort of the way we can work in this agile manner for our customers, they come to our facility, they see the product, they work with our engineers, is really one of the reasons why I think we've been successful, you know, in this sort of B2B marketplace.
What's the most interesting pedicab you've designed?
We've got our DJ bike, which was pretty fun. So like we made a mobile DJ booth on the back of the bike. So you drive down the street and they're DJing in the back. I mean, we have some awesome beverage products for like all the big beer brands and Starbucks that we've built for. We've built beer bottle prop bikes out of the back. We've done a lot of sampling stuff. A mobile coffee shop we made was actually pretty cool for Nescafe. We've done a lot of different stuff. So, and a lot of fun projects.
What are the industries or the industry sectors that intersect the most with last mile delivery?
You know, I'd say the carriers, right? Like, so like you've got an e-commerce, right? So all your traditional retail sort and grocery, right, has moved online. And I think that's been a big driver. And, you know, it's also speed. One of the shifts we're seeing now is like, at first Amazon was doing 2-day and we thought that was the most unbelievable thing that we could get stuff in 2 days. And now it's like 2 hours. And that mode shift has happened not only on small stuff, but people are expecting like couches and grills to be delivered same day too. And so, you know, from a distribution perspective, one of the big changes that we've seen is before traditionally you've got distribution centers 15, 20 miles outside of the city where tractor trailers are going to and trucks are then bringing the product into the city. that has really changed in COVID. And actually, it was changing before COVID. But this notion around micro and nano fulfillment, where we're using like parking garages and small distribution facilities right in downtown urban cores to cross-dock freight from trucks and vans into bikes and with walkers and with robots and with drones. And that is basically going to be a growing trend that we're going to see just continue to sort of evolve. That's very much in its infancy right now.
And this plays right into the notion that in many cities, they're looking at pollution-free zones or no, you know, gas-powered vehicle zones. How is that playing itself out?
So there's one part of this where you got to have carrier validation, right? You got the carriers to say, look, we like bikes. We want bikes as part of our infrastructure and operation strategy. There's another part of this from a city perspective. And again, this is a big driver we've seen in COVID. You know, a lot of cities right now are closing down streets to encourage outdoor dining, outdoor retail. They're restricting vehicular access. Some cities are just closing down streets altogether to vehicle traffic. And that's a growing trend that we think is going to stay in the long run. And obviously that poses a challenge for carriers and delivery companies. So if I cannot bring my vehicle onto a street, how do I deliver there? So that's one part. The other part is you talk to is there's also cities that are implementing emission-free zones, right? So I can't go in a particular neighborhood or in a particular street if I have an emission-toting vehicle, right? So I either have to be on a bike or I have to be in an electric vehicle or natural gas or some sort of clean energy vehicle. You know, when we go and we speak to cities and municipalities right now and you talk about cargo bikes for delivery, they kind of sit back like open arms, like, great, like, what do we have to do? Like, how can we support that? Because from their perspective, right, any way they can move vans and trucks that are creating congestion, that are creating pollution to cities are saying, great, how can we go and support that? So that's definitely a topic that we're spending a lot of time talking about. And I think it's exciting to see the momentum we're seeing in small cities and big cities alike all across the country.
Well, as you know, many cities have historic districts where the streets are narrow and you really can't get access with something that's much bigger than what you are manufacturing.
Yeah, well, I think, look, it's the reason why cargo bikes have proliferated in Europe. I mean, what we are doing is not rocket science. Like, this isn't like we've had this crazy new design and idea. Cargo bikes have been doing delivery in Europe for years, right? And a lot of that is market acceptance, but a lot of it's just the overall infrastructure of those streets and cities. Super narrow roads, great bike infrastructure, and we're just like 10 or 15 years behind them right now.
For our listeners who can't visualize the scope of this, how much cargo can one of these bikes handle?
We have three different models. So our smallest models are Venture Series, lightweight, 140 pounds, about 12 cubic feet. So, you know, you can fit a decent amount of groceries in the back of that. It's a nice little box that sits on the back of the bike. So that's our smaller format. 2-hour delivery, pharmaceuticals, alcohol, grocery, like quick and nimble, you know, that's a great option for that. As you move up to into our 350 and 480 series, so 35 inches wide, 48 inches wide, those bikes are going to run 70 to 75 cubic feet of storage. That's a lot of parcel and a lot of groceries. You can climb into the back of those. So quite a bit, you know, in terms of like cubic capacity. But we always have this like fine line of like size versus safety, right? Because if you make it too big, you ultimately create a vehicle and it becomes unsafe and really no longer a bike. And so, you know, we have to kind of work with our clients to create that balance of like what's safe, what's still a bike, but what's still offering some of the advanced technological features in the bike that these carriers are looking for.
Your vehicles are competing in the last mile with many larger vehicles in the same space. What are the safety concerns you have to pay attention to?
And a lot of pedestrians and just vehicles in general. I mean, there's just there as you get into a city. And so safety has been paramount for us, like from the very beginning, because we work in a, like a high risk sort of environment with pedicabs and taking people around. So a lot of our design philosophy has been, you know, safety driven. But interestingly enough, and specifically in sort of the last mile delivery space, there's not guidelines or a benchmark in terms of how you regulate cargo bikes or e-cargo bikes. Like in the same way DOT would regulate, you know, trucks operating on the roads. And so we have found ourselves in many cases working with the carriers to develop, you know, those guidelines of like what safety looks like. And so, and it's not even from a design and engineering perspective of how the bikes are built. It goes to like battery safety and charging. It goes to like rear view cameras and blind spots. It goes to like, you know, accelerometers and hard braking and sensoring to know when people are coming up behind you or in front of you. And so like, you know, those are all the things we're thinking about to make sure that this, you know, vehicle for the driver is the safest, you know, thing possible, you know, recognizing the environment they're in with all the vehicles and trucks and pedestrians. So it's sort of at our core, right? It's just an organization. And it's something that, you know, we are heavily invested in and we're continuing to invest in, and kind of like the onus kind of lands on us to create what that benchmark is of how we create a safe e-cargo bike. And hopefully others will follow along the way.
Ben, you've done coaster cycles for your entire adult life. How do you maintain your motivation, your energy?
There's a part of me, and I think this goes back to this notion around like innovation and drive and wanting to do something bigger and better. There's periods where I just get complacent, right? And like complacency is not good from an entrepreneur's perspective, because complacency allows competition to come in and do it better than you. And we've experienced that. I think I've always just been really interested in kind of being like, you know, first to market and trying new things and trying to collaborate with organizations, both in the public and private sector, to bring, you know, new concepts and new business ideas that just have not been tried. And so, you know, I think that's been a big driver for me personally, and something that I'm going to continue to push forward in the years to come as the market changes. And so we're doing a lot in last mile delivery. We've talked a lot about that today. And you know, I don't know, maybe in 5 years from now, we're doing something completely different. But, you know, that's something that feels right today. And we're going to continue to kind of grow with that market opportunity.
Ben, as you look back over the 16-year journey that you've been involved with Coaster Cycles, what lessons can you share? What advice can you share to our listeners about what you've learned?
So failure is important. You know, I've had a lot of failures, and like the lessons that we've learned out of failures have taught us, you know, what works and what doesn't work. Believing and investing in your people who you work with, who are committed and who you, you know, work to inspire. And look, going with your gut, right? I mean, I think, you know, there's a certain level of like risk that any entrepreneur has to take on. And you have to sort of block out some of the noise that you often hear and kind of go with your instinct and what you think is going to be right. Like the face shields, you know, that like said, was this, you know, we're thinking, is this what we should be doing? And I think ultimately we said that this is it, right? This feels right and what we should be doing. And you have to continue to iterate and evolve, right? You can't be in business for 16 years doing the same thing. It's, well, you can, but there's very few companies who do that. So you have to continue to evolve and to innovate and to come up with new ideas and new solutions. And I think that's been something we've done very, very well at. And, you know, our business has changed over the years, and we do very little of what we did at the very beginning now. And I think that's a good thing. And, you know, we're going to continue to innovate and evolve in the next, hopefully, 15 years.
And how has the Montana component of your business worked out for you?
Well, people love the idea that we're in Montana, and they love the idea that they can go travel to Montana and see Montana. So there's certainly an allure to it just because it's Montana. But beside that, I think, and frankly, more importantly, the level of support that we have received from the governor's office all the way down to the Missoula Job Service, right, has, and everything else in between, has just been remarkable. And I talk about this very regularly, that like, if we were in California, we would just be another number, right? And in Montana, like, people genuinely want to support each other, and they want to see others succeed, and they're willing to help out and do like anything they can. And so we're super proud to call Montana home. You know, we don't have any intentions on leaving Montana right now. In fact, we're investing more in the community, you know, through our facility and hiring on new people and personnel. it's been great. I've got nothing but great things to say about Montana.
How large is your workforce in Montana?
So it varies and fluctuates. You know, our crew there right now, I want to say, is about 20 people. And we anticipate, based on our sort of workflow right now and orders that we have to fulfill, adding another 35 people before the end of the year.
Last question. What does the future look like for Ben Morris?
My hope and my vision is to really sort of change the way people think about delivery and the modes in which delivery happens to people's homes and businesses. You know, I think towards the latter part of this year, in some cities across America, there's going to be a large fleet of coaster cargo bikes rolling out in their cities. And I think that's awesome. It's something, you know, I'm super proud of. I'm super proud of our team for the work they've done. And our idea and our hope is to see more bikes servicing these types of applications in more cities across America and across the world. You know, we hope in the coming years we can continue to see that growth. And our team is going to support that and continue to invest in that every way we can.
Ben, thank you for your candid insights, and I wish you great success on your future plans.
Thanks, Arnie. Appreciate you having me on the show.
I appreciate your listening to Can Do, produced by Peter Hoag and Beth Ann Austin in association with Montana Public Radio. For comments, recommendations for future guests, or general information, please go to mtpr.org. There you can also find previous guest contact information and content from all our shows. Listen next time for more essential business lessons from Can Do. I'm Arnie Sherman, wishing you good health and prosperity.